Welcome to Heartland Darkland. I'm Shannon.
And I'm Cassie.
What's up, hey, guys? Darkhearts. Here we are again, getting closer to Halloween.
I know, this month has gone by so fast. I don't know where it's gone.
I'm really sad because this is like my favorite month ever and it's already over halfway done.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's just going to get more expensive from here on out because then it's like, you know, you have Christmas coming up and...
No shit. And then both of my kids' birthdays are like... right after Christmas.
Yeah, it's an expensive time of year, that is for sure.
Yes, it is.
But yeah, you know, we're back at it again. We posted something to our social earlier today. Cassie, you want to talk about it?
Yeah, so I don't know how many of our listeners have been seeing or following. I know I've got a few people I've been texting with, the Grim Mystic ladies and stuff too. I've sent them some stuff and I've got some other people sending me stuff, but there is this huge case going on in the Heartland right now that I can't believe isn't national news. So for those of you who didn't hear about it, you haven't seen our social media post, in Excelsior Springs, Missouri, there is a potential serial killer that they have just caught. A young woman who it turns out she is a Black woman, which I feel like they took forever to even tell us that.
I know. I just read that today, and it's just been going on for almost a couple weeks at least, right?
It's been a couple weeks now. So while this man was dropping off his child at school, a young woman escaped his house, made it to several, like she pounded on several neighbors' houses. This older woman let her in. And we find out that this woman, she had a homemade, like, metal dog shock collar on her neck.
And it was even, like, suppressing where she couldn't breathe well, right?
And she couldn't breathe well. They were able to, the woman who she went to, like, helped cut it a little bit in one thing I read, so she could talk and breathe a little easier. We don't know this woman's name. Obviously, she's the victim. But one thing that was stated is she said, my friends didn't make it. So this man's house is all, I mean, they have the entire yard fenced off. They have doors boarded up. There's been no, police haven't come out and said, yes, we have found other bodies. You know, this is an ongoing investigation and stuff. But the thing is the article I posted today too, I want to say it was like a Prospect Avenue. It sounds like it's a predominantly Black community. Mm-hmm. They have been, saying we have missing women. We have missing Black women. We have Black women who are winding up murdered from this area at an alarming rate that it's not being addressed. And the police were like, no, these are unfounded rumors. And so the media has been following that suit and suppressing anything about that. And then we have this woman and she stated she was taken in early September from the Prospect Avenue area. And so she was kept there for over a month. It sounds like he made some secret room in his basement.
Which they did confirm they found, right?
Yes.
So it's like,
I think there's like documents that have been made public that...
Yeah.
There's been proof that she was whipped while she was chained. Mm-hmm. And Facebook posts of this guy shows like this is clearly race motivated. Talks about
area.
It's, you know, Kansas City, Missouri, that area, there is still a lot of racism alive in some of those areas. I mean, everywhere, let's face it, but you're getting more south there where it, I think, kind of becomes a bigger problem. And so some court documents have come out, but like, and there have been things that people have found from his old Facebook posts and things like that, where he talks about this race war is coming and whites are the superior race and all these types of things.
Oh yeah. And when you look at the picture of him, you're like, oh yeah, you definitely look the type.
Yes.
Nasty.
But like the article I posted even talks about how they've been at his house several times. The police have for several different complaints.
Right.
And I'm just questioning like, okay, did he have full custody of his child? Or is this like a part-time, like, was there a child in this house? Because like, there were welfare checks on him, were some of those, like his dad from out of state, his work because he wasn't showing up.
even a dog loose or something, right?
Yeah. Isn't and that then one of them was like too? A dog off leash or something like that.
Yeah. Like stuff that if you're hiding someone, maybe be a little bit more.
Yeah.
I mean, not like tips on how to do that, but like clearly we're not working with the sharpest guy here.
No, but the problem is he clearly got away with this for over a month.
Yeah.
For at least one person.
Yeah. And we have no clue how many others.
Right.
Were they taken with her? I know we've talked about this a little bit. Or were they there and they became friends while she was like there, you know?
Or she had known them, they were already taken, and then she's taken too. You know, it sounds like this is a fairly close-knit community where these people are being taken from.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like one of those things. And, you know, just because this is kind of a popular thing in media right now with Netflix just coming out. But if you look at Dahmer did the same thing, and you have this black community saying, hey, there's something not right here, and the police ignoring it. And I'm assuming you're watching that and you're like, how the hell do you let this go? And oh my goodness. But now we're in 2022 and that is still happening.
And I feel like if she was white, I feel like that would have been mentioned almost immediately.
That's true.
I kind of thought that it was interesting that it was never said, and I didn't want to obviously just jump to conclusions and assume, but I did think it was odd that they didn't even mention that until today. And it's like, oh, because there could be so many different reasons. I mean, and obviously with it being an active investigation, but they could be trying to prevent fingers from getting pointed at them, when in reality, why are we not hearing about a bunch of missing women in a small area?
And that's something that I know I've discussed with you and like Leslie and stuff and some other people who I've been discussing this with. And I'm like, I don't understand how we have so many women going missing and no one, it not being a big deal.
Right.
And I guess for me, my first thought was, were they sex workers? Were they homeless? Because that's still a very vulnerable community as well.
Right.
That a lot of times, and
that people wouldn't know to report them missing just because.
Yes.
Right. And because if it was, they were reported missing, I feel like that maybe would have been a bigger deal and people would have been actively looking, unless they were, and we just didn't hear about it because it was shut
and that's
down
not,
quick.
And like, and who's to say that some of these women being taken this for black community, they might've still been in that same scenario where people are saying, hey, we haven't seen them around. Like, well, they're a sex worker, they're homeless, so they're, you know, not reliable if something's gonna happen, yada yada. Where these police are then saying, no, these are unfounded rumors, because I just don't understand. How do you have,
right,
how do you ignore a whole community saying we have missing women? Right. I can't fathom that. And
it's like, was it just a crime of opportunity because he saw, you know, there's these women and they're looking, you know, I mean, they're going to go with whoever, because if that's what they're doing, you know, and then it became easy. So he continued doing it.
And it's one of those things. It's like, there's so much information we don't know yet.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to say it like, listen, even if the victim is a sex worker, there's nothing wrong with that. Honestly, that's a whole other situation in that. I feel like we need to legalize that, make shit safer for everyone involved, but that's a whole other thing that we could go down. But it doesn't matter if you're a sex worker or
you're
a drug addict
being.
Or homeless. You're a human and you don't deserve any of that.
No, it doesn't
and
matter.
If
yeah,
people around you raise concerns, I feel like that needs to be taken into account. Could it be that sometimes, yes, they just moved locations or something? Maybe. But no one, I feel like even within those communities, they have a sense of community. So if someone's going to take off, they're going to be like, hey, I'm heading out of this joint. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just...
Well, right. And even if she was a sex worker, like you said, like her friends, somebody would know, or somebody would maybe notice her not being there.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see if someone else working in that same, you know, area were to report that, they wouldn't take it seriously because they're like, oh, you're just a sex worker. Or, you know, that's just unfortunately how people are.
Unfortunately,
about human beings, if they don't agree with them, then they look down on them and...
Exactly. And that's
go ahead.
Well, and then I'm like, but then we just get into that whole victim blaming aspect. Well, if you did this and that, I was like, no, like
you're still a human being. I don't care what you did. You don't, nobody should be treating anybody like garbage. So
no,
that's the end of that. I think everyone can agree with that statement. Like,
yes,
you know, well, most people, good people with a heart, believe that people should.
I would hope that the people listening to us yeah, can agree with, we're gonna with that aspect of yeah. at least that no and one deserves that.
The only people that deserve that are the people like Dexter, who goes after the bad guys, and that's okay.
Right.
I mean, I'm not like saying that's okay, but you know, I think we can agree that it's fine. You can kill people yeah. if they're bad people. Just kidding.
If we know for a fact that they're bad, I mean.
Correct. But we don't know that.
Listen, that's again a whole other tangent I could go on. Like, right. we just have a thing about opinions.
Yeah. Which nobody cares. Our opinions. Vigilantism. So, yeah. I was like, nobody really probably cares, but it's fine. We basically wanted to bring that case just to your attention because yes.
It hasn't been. I've talked to a few people. Yeah. I have. You know, I've talked to a few people who had no idea that this was a thing going on. And I'm like, yeah, okay, we all know why? About the serial killer in California. And thank God they were caught.
I know. That's a whole other thing we could talk about. That one is crazy as well.
Yes. But I'm like, how is this not big news? How is this not...
I don't know. It is very sad. And there's a lot of reasons. It's like, why? And I think about even, I mean, it's terrible, but the woman in Massachusetts, all of a sudden I'm drawing a blank, who was jogging, or was it Nashville? Maybe. I think it was Nashville. Maybe who was jogging, was, you know, abducted and killed. Oh, that was on the news within minutes. It's like, I don't know if that was maybe just a bigger case because of the fact that they did have footage of her being taken. But yeah, I also think that a lot of it is because of the color of her skin, the circumstances, where she was. So it is really sad that this case isn't getting more attention. And hopefully it will as things start coming to light. But
yeah,
if you guys haven't heard of this, go look it up. And there's tons of different things you can find.
There's
on
so
it
much.
Now.
There's so much out there. And I mean, and you know, this case and the fact that it's not getting that national attention like so many others do, like, this is why we started this podcast. Like,
oh yeah,
the heartland of the United States is so often overlooked, even when bigger things are going on, unless it's some sort of sensationalized or there's a cute white victim or, you know, those things, your quote unquote good news stories. And
it is sad because with it being the Midwest, yeah, we obviously still have enough crime to talk about, but the numbers are significantly lower than other areas in the country. So when something like this does happen, it should be huge news, you know, because
it should be.
You don't really hear about serial killers. Not that we don't know that yet for sure, but the situation in general, if he is, that doesn't really happen in the Midwest. So why is this not being more talked about, you know?
The fact that he could even potentially be a serial killer, I'm surprised it's not being talked about. Because let's face it, like, for lack of a better way of phrasing this, like, media consumers love serial killers, right? Dahmer, new Dahmer show and how much it got. Like, let's face facts. Like, I find them intriguing and interesting. I'm not trying to glorify serial killers. We do definitely have people out there. Like, there are people who are like... to worship Dahmer and shit now after,
like,
that.
Like, even, so on gross. The Dahmer series, at the end, it shows him getting fan mail and shit. And it's like,
it's so gross.
That's disgusting.
It's getting the Ted Bundy teeth marks and shit like that. Like, that's disgusting. Sorry if you have that, but I'm not gonna, not sorry, because that's,
No.
So, the fact that this is a potential serial killer even, it's like, how is that not enough to bring this to the national attention?
Is it because she's black? Like, it makes you kind of wonder.
Because she's black, and it sounds like it's probably likely that if he had more victims, they were all black.
Correct. So, I mean, and the thing she was saying, that she had been raped multiple times, you know, it's like, excuse me? Like, it's shocking.
Well, she was there for a month, and I know I saw this interview on TikTok with, it sounds like it was this woman's house, but like maybe her grandma was there watching her kids or something like that. And her grandma's the one who helped the young woman. And she was like, you know, she was clothed, but barely.
Yeah.
It's October. She's like in a thin tank top and shorts. And there was obvious signs of being bound by her wrists and ankles.
Can you imagine this young woman having someone knock on your door like that? Like, oh my God. Talk about traumatizing for everybody.
Yeah, and my first thought when I first heard about this case, I was like, this reminds me so much of Ariel Castro. In Ohio?
Yep.
And keeping those women for so long. This doesn't sound like he kept the women, though. I mean, he's obviously kept them for a while. I'm wondering.
Right.
So much.
Yeah, because then it's like, well, yeah, like you said, how old is his kid? Was his kid there? Was he young enough? He doesn't know. Was there a wife? I mean, we don't know. There's many details. And so as this comes out, we'll try to keep you guys updated too as we hear more, because I'm sure there's going to be a ton that's going to come out. Just like the initial thing, you know, with Ariel Castro, when that first came out, all we knew was like these women have been kept, you know, and they've been missing. And that was like it. It took a long time before I think a lot of that stuff came out. So I'm hoping that we can hear kind of what's going on and that there can be some sort of justice.
I'm really hoping for justice for the young woman who escaped. And also, like, the amount of courage it had to have taken for her to to leave, like, that's amazing. And so she's now, you know, if she hadn't been able to escape with the police not taking this seriously, how long could this have gone on for?
I know. It really makes you wonder what we're going to find out. And the fact
about how long this has been happening.
Yeah. And like, what was it that she finally got free or the courage to leave? I mean, what was this?
I mean, there's so much. And so hopefully for the families of these other missing women from the same area, hopefully, as horrible as it is, they'll get some kind of closure with her having escaped if they're finding these bodies. I mean, we'll keep you guys posted. This is obviously a very new ongoing thing. We're following it. Like I said, I have several people besides Shannon who we send text messages back and forth about all the Shannon, you'll send me a thing and then I'll pass it on. And, you know, I'll vice versa. And that's why I pass it to you.
Earlier, I'm like, did you send me that one or did I send you that? Because it goes back and forth a lot.
It does. It does.
And then like today I went to text you and right when I sent my message, I had a message from you pop up and I was like, okay, that's weird. Like we sent each other a text at the same time. Nobody cares, but I care because it's cool and it's fun.
It is. But so I mean, that was just something we felt like last week when our episode aired, we had heard about this, but like I heard about it like right after we already recorded, because we recorded our episode so early, afterwards, so we couldn't bring it up really last week. And even last week, we still didn't have a ton of information about it. So I think that's why I know we both kind of agreed we wanted to bring it up. We wanted to share it to our socials, bring light to this, because this is an ongoing thing, but this is the Midwest. And I'm surprised that with it being a potential serial killer.
Right.
How was this not California's thing? It was like, oh, there's a serial killer in California.
These I know. Happening. First I'd heard of it and then all that. And it's like, but yeah, within minutes I had 100 stories at my fingertips, you know? So it's like,
So we wanted to share that. You guys reach out to us if you have questions or you find stuff,
you know like, anything, you're near that area and you know more about
it. Sounds like it's a small town. Excelsior Springs, it doesn't sound like it's very big.
It sounds like a cool name. I just really like to hear that. Say it again.
I know.
Say it again.
Excelsior Springs.
Yeah, it just sounds really fancy and cool. I mean, not fancy, but it's just a fun word to say.
It is.
Cooler than Omaha, you know?
I'm curious if we'll hear stuff from his neighbors about like
sketchy stuff going on.
And
yeah,
kept to himself, you know,
we'll just go down that road soon. Maybe
we'll just go down that road. I feel like we could have just probably had a whole episode about us talking and speculating about
this. Could have been like a mini for the Patreon.
It could have been.
You know what, guys, real quick too, I know we have a long case to talk about, but just in case you forgot, we have the Patreon. We can put the information in the show notes again. We would love to have your support. We can add more. I mean, I think we've been pretty clear about what it is now.
Yeah.
So
reach out to us if you're confused.
Yeah. And we still have our giveaway going on for at least a couple more weeks. We have it pinned on our socials. I think it's Facebook and Instagram. And is it okay? And then you guys just tag a friend, share our post. You'll automatically be entered to win one of the birdies that we have, which is the little alarm system that you can kind of just take with you anywhere you go. That was a quick snippet. There you go. There it is.
Yeah.
Which if you have questions on that, of course, reach out as well.
Listen, always reach out. We're always happy to chat.
We're fine. Yeah. If you need to know something or want to know something, just message us. If you want to just say hi, please do that as well.
Yeah, we'd love it.
Thanks.
We have a regular listener, Amanda, who regularly I chat with on Instagram. So,
hey, Amanda. Yeah.
Reach out. Let us know. But now that we're like 20 minutes in,
mm-hmm.
this week and oh, next yeah. week.
Oh, yeah. We're, I kind of have a little bit about what we're going to do for that.
Okay.
So well, I'll just start I'll let you, if that's cool.
I'll let you explain it then. Yeah.
Here we go. Well,
it's your episode.
I'll kind of explain that too as we go so I don't give away too much on yours. So as we mentioned only, you know, maybe a bazillion and two times, it's spooky season and we love that. And so we really wanted to cover a case that's kind of, it's insanely close actually to where we live. And it's one of those notorious cases most people know of, well, from this area anyway.
Yes.
I'm sure there are several people who don't. I did not know about this until I moved to the Omaha area. But this will definitely give you all the creeps. So the thing that is really creepy about this case is the fact that it remains unsolved to this day. So this is back from 1912. Also, that was the same year the Titanic sank. I just wanted to throw out a random little fun fact for you.
Okay.
Because I'm a Titanic nerd. So that was a big year of things going on. So there's so much to this case. So because of that, we're actually going to do our very first like two-part episode.
Yes.
So yeah, it's that legit. We're going to do it. So this week, I'm going to cover the crime portion about the actual crime that took place, kind of tell you about all the creepiness that happened, how it happened. And then next week, Cassie's actually going to follow up with the creepiness that still happens there. Cue the scary music, you know.
If only I knew how to end it. I mean, I could
probably. I know. That works.
Maybe
that's
I'll figure
what I was
out.
Going for.
Maybe I'll figure out how to like insert that in there, but then I have to find it. We'll
no,
see
that's
how.
A lot of work. We'll just keep yeah. that in mind for the next time we want to do that. You know,
there we
that's
go.
Fine. So things, yes, do still happen there. So I would actually like to add that after diving into all the things Velisca Axhouse, it's hard to theory. I can't even say that word.
Theorize.
Theorize. Yeah, I'm adding an extra like I in there, I think. Theorize.
Yes.
Who did this? There's lots of things that go into this. I'm kind of convinced that it could be linked to a serial killer. Speaking of that, based on some of these evidence we found, but let's just take our little spooky butts down that road, shall we?
Let's do it.
So here we go. So I probably didn't even mention yet, but we are doing the Velisca Axhouse murders, which indeed took place in Velisca, Iowa. So real quick, tons of different sources I used for this. We'll put them all in the show notes. I listened to several podcasts and I read different excerpts from different books. The Man from the Train by Bill James, A Nightmare in Velisca by Richard Estep, Velisca by Roy Marshall. And I actually read the 1912 Velisca Axe Murders blog, which is very, very interesting. So we'll share all of that. So
yes, I really want to read The Man from the Train.
Yes. I actually almost bought it the other day. And then I was like, well, I'm not going to have time to read the whole thing. So I found like parts of it that, I mean,
yeah.
Plus this case is so big. We could literally have an entire just podcast about this where we
about
could have
it
10
and
episodes
all the theories.
Or,
yeah. Like a
so,
mini series about it.
The thing that's really, I mean, I guess I don't know if it's cool or not. To me, it's cool. To you, it's cool. Most people listening are going to think it's cool, but you can actually still visit the house that this crime took place in. I Googled it just for fun to see, and it was what, like an hour and 20 minutes away from
Yeah, it's not super
Omaha,
far from Omaha.
So it's not far. So when are we going to go do that, Cassie? Yeah, we can give you more deets on that after we finish the case, because you can go just tour the house. You can stay the night. There's all sorts of things. And I know a few of our listeners have actually done this before. So I'd be interested to hear about your experiences, which that'll probably go better hand in hand after Cassie's episode next week.
Or email me. Actually,
oh, to put it in. That's a
yes.
great idea. Good call.
Yes. So if you've been there and you've stayed, please email or message us.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Episode.
Because mm-hmm. that way, I mean, the more the merrier. I love those
yes.
kinds of things, especially when they're from people that we know that directly had that happen. So, okay. So like I said, 1912, I think we all know this was a much simpler time. I can't speak from experience, but, you know, it was a simple time in a tiny town, especially, in the United States. So Villisca, Iowa, it says that the population, we're just going to go with an average of about 1200 people. I found a million different numbers from that time till now. That's kind of the average number that we found. So it's clearly a very small place. So it's back then, it was a really safe place. Not that it's not now, but it was safe then. And it was also a dry town, which I found interesting. So I think with that too, it just kind of excludes the fact that people could get really wild and crazy. And
right.
Nobody seemed to complain about that. It seemed like everyone was okay with it being a dry town, which I'm like, oh my gosh, I think that would drive me to drink just because of it being so small and like nothing to do. But they were cool with that.
Let's be honest, some people probably had some.
I mean, yeah, let's be honest. Well, I mean, yeah, I'm sure. They said it was a dry town. What they did behind doors, we don't know. Well, literally in this case. So,
yes.
The community was super tight. They looked out for each other. They never locked any of their doors. So, I mean, I think that's, you always hear those kind of stories about small towns. Yeah. The family we're going to talk about is the Moore family. So they were involved in this horrific crime. So there were actually six members of their family. So mom and dad. So Josiah was the dad, 43 years old at the time. He ran a very successful business. It was a lot of like farming equipment, that kind of stuff. And like John Deere was one of his big accounts. So even if you don't know farm stuff, everybody's heard of John Deere.
Everyone knows John Deere.
Yeah, for sure. His wife, Sarah, she was 39. She was super involved in their Presbyterian church. And then they had four kids, Herman, who was 11, Mary Catherine was 10, Arthur was 7, and Paul was 5. So this was June 9th, 1912. And unfortunately, this night, Mary Catherine actually invited two of her friends to come spend the night. So the friends were Ina May Stillinger, and she was 8, and Lena Gertrude Stillinger, and she was 12, I believe. Yes, 12. So Ina and Lena, which I love that. That was my great
friend's
name was Lena, and I've always loved that name. And there was a very just unfortunate events how this all happened. They weren't going to be spending the night. They were actually going to come over just earlier that day to play. A lot of unfortunate things just happened where they ended up staying the night there. So in total, there's going to be 8 victims involved in this murder. So the night of June 9th, 1912, the Moore family and their friends, their little guests, Ina and Lena, they attended a children's church program. They called it the Children's Day program at their church. So Sarah actually coordinated this program and they were all there together. And this ended at about 9:30 p.m. So they obviously, I think in a small town, everyone lives somewhat close to everything where you can walk. They lived out like farm area, but they walked home all together. So they got home around 9:45 or 10 p.m. So not far from where they're at. So we don't know much about what they did after that. Probably all got ready for bed. I imagine it was loud with that many children in the house.
Right. And it's a small house.
Oh, yeah. I know. Because when you think about that many people and then you see pictures of the house, it's like, oh, I pictured it to be like way bigger when you just kind of hear the kind of family. It's
small.
Small. Yes. Mm-hmm. So later in the evening, we don't know exact times because of the year. They don't have a lot of things that can help with that. But so sometime between midnight and 5 a.m., we do know that someone entered their home. So they lived in this tiny but beautiful farmhouse. This person entered through an unlocked door. So before he, I know I say he, we don't know for sure because it's unsolved, but
likely a man.
Okay, yeah. And especially with a lot of the things that happened. And back then, I don't think that would really is really heard of. So, okay, so before he entered the home, he obviously had taken some time to kind of look around the yard, house, shed, barn, all the things, which it could have just been, you know, him casing it out previously, or it could have just been kind of like, oh, hey, look at this. He finds an axe outside of a shed, and he decides to bring that into the home with him when he enters. So there's a lot of very interesting things that happen, detailed things that happen. We know that he found an oil lamp when he entered the home. So you'll hear some of this kind of differently if you listen to things or watch things. But he found, you know, the glass, the oil lamp, you know, with like the tall chimney part of it. Yes. I mean, like anything. Okay. So he finds that, and it looks like he takes the chimney part off of that lamp. And then this is really crazy and interesting to me, because he splits the wick in half in order to not shed as much light. And the reason I mention this is because in later on, you hear about other cases where a wick is split, and that is a very specific thing to do, or to even know that that's what that would do. Like, I wouldn't know. I mean, whatever. So he's obviously trying to just kind of keep it a little bit more dim. Yeah, like now we just use cell phone flashlights, so we really don't know what that's like, you know, first world problems. So he goes in, and they think that he walked past a bedroom that was downstairs near their parlor. And in that bedroom, there was actually two girls that slept, and that was Ina and Lena. He proceeds to go upstairs, finds the bedroom where Josiah and Sarah were asleep. This is where he commits the first murder. So they say, which we'll go into more detail about the crime itself too. This is just the overview kind of, but he raises the axe and brings it down over their faces several times. So this all happens. So let's go to the next morning, because this is when I think the majority of the things are all going on. And it's a very interesting trail of events here. So Mary Peckham was their neighbor. She was like early 60s. So that's young. They kind of make it sound like she's like some elderly woman. I'm like, like maybe back then.
1912. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But she was clearly very active. She on her farm, because she lived next door, and she did all things, all the morning chores. And she was really close with the Moores. The kids kind of thought of her as like a grandma, and she just loved them. So it said that she got up at like 4 a.m., which was normal when you live on a farm. That's when they start doing all their chores before it gets hot, especially in June. So yeah, she's out doing her chores hella early, and around 6 or 7. So it's been a couple hours, and she notices that the Moores were not out doing their morning chores. And she thought that was odd, because especially with that many kids, there's always like kids laughing. She can hear things. It's just, and what kid sleeps past, I mean, even then, like 6 or 7, I feel like, no,
my daughter does. And I love it.
Good on her, man. My kid never will sleep.
My son doesn't, but
yeah, some kids, like I'd say majority kids up.
I mean, like, yeah, I remember waking up super early when I was young.
Ugh, awful. I know. And I'm like, ew, don't. So yeah, the fact that they're not up and moving is weird. They had several animals on their farm, and at this point, they're starting to get pissy, because, I mean, they want to be fed, cows need to be milked, the horses need to be walked around, all the things. So this was really unlike the Moores. They were very responsible and just really well-liked in town. They were a great family, and no one had anything bad to say about this family also, I would just like to add. They always took really good care of their property. So Mary was sure that something was off. It was just really weird. So in one of the books I had read where Mary said that there was just an odd stillness that was coming off of their house. Mary looked at the house, and when she was looking around, she could see that all the curtains were still closed. And that was also really strange. So she decides to just go check on them. So she knocks on their door. No one answers. She tried to go inside, and the door was locked, which is also odd, because that door was never locked. So she went around the back, tries to open the back door. That door was also locked. So she's kind of at that point where she's like, I don't know what to do. It's not like they just have cell phones to call someone to come check it out. So she just goes ahead and does all their chores to help them out. She just thinks, I don't know what's going on, but clearly this stuff isn't going to get done if I don't do it. So she does all the things. The whole time she was doing this, she said she was just very worried because she knew something was wrong, but she really was hoping something else was going on. So I just think too, like, imagine doing all that next door, not knowing at this point that there's dead bodies just in the house. Yeah. And you are like, and I also think, like, I'm surprised you couldn't maybe smell it yet, but maybe it was because it was so soon, but like, no air conditioning.
That soon. Yeah.
Yeah. No air conditioning.
That June. Soon. You probably yeah. wouldn't. Necessarily.
Especially if it was on the later end of like closer to the 5 a.m. time. So, also, you know, Ina and Lena, since they were staying the night there, her parents were a bit concerned because they hadn't heard from their daughters who had stayed the night. They knew that, you know, everyone's up early all the time in that town, and their daughters were supposed to call them when they were up, and they did not do that. So their mom tried calling their house as well, which, yes, they did have phones. I was like, do they have phones? But also what they had to do, it said, what I heard was like, they would call like an operator and be like, connect right. me to the Moore house, you know?
Yeah.
And so, it wasn't like, I mean, your phones you're thinking of now, I mean, a very old school phone, but.
I know, but then I'm also wondering, because the house didn't have electricity.
I don't know. Unless it was like out, I don't even know. I don't know. Because they talk about it several times, but I'm like, yeah. if he was a very good, I mean, businessman, they obviously had some yeah. kind of money. But yeah, why would there not be other like electricity?
Unless it was like the phone was cheaper to yeah. connect than the whole hot yeah. wiring the whole house, I guess, for electricity.
Yeah. And one, like, maybe it was run through something different than electricity maybe. At that time. I don't know. We're not even going to try to go down that road, okay. but you yeah. know. Mm-hmm. So they don't answer. So now that's very concerning because, yeah, we know that they would be up by now. So the Sillingers, okay, the mom, I don't remember her name. It doesn't probably matter. But so she's concerned. So she even calls Ross Moore. So that's Josiah's brother. He thinks it's weird that no one's answering as well. So he tries calling Josiah's work. He's not at work. So he just goes over there to the house because weird. He knocks on the doors, the windows, nothing. Nobody's answering. And then it says that he unlocks the door with his copy of his key. So initially I'm like, why would you bang on the windows and stuff if you had a key all along to get in? Mm-hmm. But after kind of looking into it, it sounds like it was more back then, like kind of a latch key that could open. They didn't have like personalized locks yeah. back then, you know? Gotcha. So it was kind of like, well, let me try this key. So that's kind of how I read that. He is able to get the door open. So he walks in and Mary's kind of behind him, but kind of like waiting on the porch because she's unsure. Upon entering, he notices that every curtain is drawn and it appears that there's even extra curtains hung up over the other curtains. So it was like pitch black in there. And it was very, it appeared to be a very intentional thing that it was that dark. This is where I was like, well, maybe they smelled something because he stated that he immediately smelled death, which that could be blood too, that metallic-y smell. Yeah. I don't know. But he proceeds to kind of walk in and he's in that downstairs area. He peers into that bedroom. He can make out two figures in bed. And he sees that there's bloodstains on the sheets and he can see that there's blood all over the walls. He's like, F this, I am out. He leaves the house, goes outside, sits down on the porch. It said he put his head in his hands and he just says, something terrible has happened. So they call the police finally. So this is where our little investigator, Henry Horton, they call him Hank. He shows up. So they said that his title was actually peace officer. So Hank was in no way prepared for something like this. Let's be honest. Who is? Now, even if that happened, I don't think you're ever prepared for something like this. So Hank, poor Hank, he goes in the house kind of just is going to do a one over, you know, check everything out before they really look into things. He opens the curtains once he's inside, and he sees the same scene that Ross saw. So he sees the blood all over. Upon looking in the bedroom where this was where Lena and Ina were, he sees a rusted, bloody axe. The axe was leaning against the wall in the bedroom, and there was still hair and flesh on it. So it was also clear that someone had tried to wipe it down, but clearly not very well. But they said because the blood, the way it was smeared on it, was could tell it was... Mm-hmm.
Hey Dark Hearts, just wanted to take a moment to tell you about She's Birdie. What this is a small device that can give you a little bit of peace of mind whether you're out walking, working late, or whatever it might be. The Birdie is a small device that can easily be on your keychain, your belt loop, your purse, or held in your hand. The original Birdie is just a loud alarm with a flashing light to help draw attention to you if you're feeling uncomfortable or you're in a situation where you need help or attention. Now they offer the Birdie Plus. Same device, except it doesn't have the flashing light. Instead, it comes with an app that gives you 24/7 access to live representatives who can talk with you while you're walking to your car or wherever you might be you feel uncomfortable, or they can even send first responders to your location, as well as sharing your GPS location with two emergency contacts and giving you an excuse call if you're in a situation where you feel uncomfortable and aren't sure how to get away. Now, what's nice about the Birdies is that it's something that you can use discreetly to call the live representatives. You just press the buttons twice. If you want an excuse call, you just tap it once and you'll get an automated call that'll help give you an excuse to get away from whatever situation you're in. Now, if you hold the button, this is what sends your location to your two emergency contacts. The original Birdie is $29.95, and the Birdie Plus is $39.95, and then you do need a subscription with that, which is $8.99 a month, or you can do the annual subscription of $89.99, saving you 20%. But if you use our code DARKHEARTS15, you'll get 15% off your Birdie as well. This is something that we love, we have for ourselves as well, just with the type of stuff that we're into, the true crime. We're clearly more aware of our surroundings. We are a little more cautious at times, and this can just give us a peace of mind. It's also great if you have teenagers who are out now, working later, school activities, to give you peace of mind about their safety as well. So again, their site is SHESBIRDIE.com, and if you use our code DARKHEARTS15, you'll get 15% off your order today. So stay Heartland kind, but Darkland wary, and have that Birdie with you to make sure you stay safe.
They tried to clean it. It was later on also identified that this was Josiah's axe. I guess, who knows, but back then everyone has an axe, and they said there was a specific area on his that was cut out on the handle, and that's how they knew it was his. So they knew that it had come from the house. So I also, when I was listening to a podcast, they talked about the fact that it's odd that he came with no weapon. So they're like, okay, so either he watched this place for a while and just banked on the fact that he would find something to use there. Like, what was the plan here? Were you going to use a knife when you went inside? I mean, like, you want to think it was planned out, but then some of that, it's like, what if the axe wasn't there? Was it just convenient? You know, I thought that was kind of an interesting point, because I didn't really think about that until they brought it up. And I was like, well, that's true. Who knows what the actual motive was, which we'll talk about that more.
But I was going to say, for me, I've listened to a lot, and I know that one man on the train theory. And mm-hmm. so, like, that's the one I like the most. So I know. I won't. But
because when I first initially was reading stuff, I was like, duh, it's so and so, this one we'll talk about later. And then I was reading it, and I was like, oh, maybe it wasn't him. So very tricky. So Hank goes into the, I guess it would be the master bedroom, essentially, where Josiah and Sarah are. He opens the curtains and there is blood everywhere. They were dead under the sheets. Everyone in the house had been covered up after the crime. And you could just see the blood staining the sheets. So my notes, I apologize to, I was like taking notes and typing as I was listening and reading things. So they're a little bit around, I mean, I kind of jump around a little bit, but there's just so much information on this. So
there is.
Also, I would like to add to you that a lot of people went through this crime scene, which is not a thing now. So that can make a huge difference on this being solved and not. So
like the whole town.
Oh yeah. Like, come on in. Let's all, I guess that's where the true crime obsession comes from. Like, you want to see, but not in this town when you know them. So we'll talk about that a little more too. So as far as like authorities and that kind of thing, there were even a lot of them that went through it, which is frowned upon as well. But like the doctors, detectives, whatever, coroners that went through it, they all kind of witnessed, I mean, the same thing. The coroner, Lindquist, was his last name. He even said that based on the blood spatter, he said that it was most likely that whoever did it was left-handed. So that was an interesting observation, especially for back then. They determined that Josiah and Sarah had been bludgeoned with such force that they were unrecognizable. The ceiling had huge gashes that had been chopped into it. So they think that that was obviously from someone raising the axe, throwing it back. They also found, you know, by looking around, they found another abandoned lamp with the chimney missing, wick split upstairs up there. So it was clear that whoever did this really wanted to keep it dim. Across the hall from Josiah and Sarah's bedroom, there was another bedroom. There was three beds with four bodies in there. They were all covered with sheets, jackets, blankets, very random items. Hank, after he looked at all of this, he said, "My God, there is someone murdered in every bed." They immediately secured the crime scene, which back then we will clearly see what that means. So they go outside, the police too, after all of this, because by now people are starting to gather and know that something's going on. Police come out and they told people, "Do not go inside. You will regret it for the rest of your lives," was a quote. And I thought, well, yeah, they shouldn't be able to go inside anyway, right?
So it shouldn't be "you'll regret it." It should be "don't go inside. It's a crime scene.
Go away from here even, please." Yeah. Like, leave. Thanks. So kind of back to the investigation side of it, several doctors and police, like I said, had gone in together and they were able to kind of piece together what had happened. So the room downstairs where they found Ina and Lena, they were able to determine that they were killed last, with Lena being the very last to die. They were both killed with blows to the head. And it said that their heads were basically reduced to nothing, like awful. Sorry, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was. Yeah. So I've been doing some watching for my side of it. And of course, they still bring up the crime for it and everything. But one of the things I watched, which I'm curious if you came across, said only the dad was killed with the sharp side of the axe and everyone else was bludgeoned.
Yes, I will talk about that actually, because I did see that as well. But yeah, I know it's kind of fun though, like doing covered. The same.
I know.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's all in here too. Oh yeah.
Okay. I was like, I knew it. The bacon.
Yeah, we're getting to all that.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Disturbing. I'm just like,
no, you're good.
Like,
it's fun
so many
though.
Things,
like, I know, because like, I've listened to some podcasts where they do like the same case and then they like kind of take turns with the stuff. I was like, that's kind of fun. Maybe down the road we can do another one. But so they were able also to determine, like I said, they were last and Lena was very last. But they think that everybody was dead before they even knew what was happening. So thank God for that, I guess, in a weird way. However,
wasn't it Lena though? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, you're good. So they were all that was determined that they were all dead. Mm-hmm. They were all found in the same positions that they had been sleeping in, which made them decide that, except for Lena. So Lena was laid like she had kind of kicked her leg out of the bed. Her hand was up under the pillow. They said her hips were like laying sideways on the bed, against the bed, but that her back was laying flat with her arm under the pillow. And they think that she might have been, one of the theories, I guess I should say, was that she had been struck and kind of wiggled down. And because of the way that the blood pooled around her hand, they don't think she was killed in that position. So I'm thinking if he killed her, pulls her down, then her hand gets stuck up there. They said that her legs were both like splayed open into like a sexual position. Mm. But they do, well, I'll talk about that here later. So that was how Lena was. There's lots of different theories on that, but one place said that she had a defensive wound on her arm, but
the one thing
I read that one spot. Okay.
I say one thing I watched said that they had it. So they thought she maybe had woken up and like brought her hand
tried to
up.
Fight. Yeah. Yeah. So they also were able to see her underwear had been removed and put under the bed. It was bloody, but it was because of from his hand, whoever removed it was that blood. And it's actually really disgusting because they were able to say that they thought too, that he had used it to try to clean the axe. Yeah. Just terrible. But the positive news, if there's any positive news on this, they were able to determine that nobody was sexually assaulted, but they do think that Lena was the victim of some sort of sexual crime. So this gets kind of weird, guys, coming up here. Or maybe that's further down. Yeah, we're going to talk about the bacon later on because of the way I organized it here. But now I'm like wanting to jump ahead and go back.
Sorry.
But no, you're good. So sadly, too, the girls were completely unrecognizable. The way that people were able to identify Lena and Eno was because their Bibles were there with them and their names were inside their Bibles. Also, people from the church knew that the girls had gone back with them that night. So back to like Josiah. So he had the most damage done to him. So either he was the target, or they might have thought that because he's the biggest physically fit, you know, he would be the easiest to fight, or not the easiest to fight, but he would fight them off, I guess, if that makes sense. So
yeah,
he was the first to actually be hit with the sharp edge of the blade. The others were hit with the other end, which we had kind of talked about, and we will talk about that a little bit more. It was kind of crazy because, I mean, yeah, you think about the end of an axe easily that could crush your skull, whatever,
right,
with whatever force you're using. But the fact that he was so vicious and used that sharp edge was a little weird. They said that Josiah was hit at least 30 times and that basically like his eyes were just like gone. Sarah's face was sliced many times later on, and they said it almost appeared that it was like dissected, but she was still recognizable. So their four children that were in the bedroom across from the hall, I don't even like talking about kid stuff like this, but I mean, it's just the facts of the case, but the tops of their heads had been broken significantly with the handle of the axe. And then it looked like their brains had been chopped off with some instrument. So then back to the girls downstairs. That's how the order of it, I guess, is where I was going with that. So mom and dad, kids across the hall, back downstairs. And he kills the girls downstairs. So then it's really eerie and sick because he then returns back to each of the rooms and completely ruins their faces after they are dead. It said that they had each been hit at least 20 times, which is just terrible.
That's so much. Yeah.
And it's like they're already dead. And then he went back and it said that he used the sharp edge of the axe after that, but killed them all initially with the handle minus Josiah.
Yeah.
Which is weird too. So some of the forensics were actually kind of cool back then. Who would have thought? I mean, it's not that people were dumb back then, but
right,
some of the things that they found, I was like, really like, wow, good job guys. Go you, you know? So Sarah, her shoe was on the floor on Joseph's side, or Joseph, Josiah, Joe. They called him Joe a lot. We can just call him whatever. But she had a shoe that was on his side of the bed. And because of the amount of blood from him and her all over, that shoe had been filled with blood from the sheets dripping into the shoe with the amount of blood.
Oh, geez.
So they were able to determine, that's how they could figure out that he had come back up in, I don't, what's the word you want to use? Cut them, hit them.
Yeah.
I don't like saying chopped. It's gross.
Yeah.
But
no.
Struck them with an axe. We'll say that. That's how they could determine that he had come up and did more, because that shoe had been filled with blood. And when he came back up, he must have like tripped over it, because the shoe was tipped over and blood had spilled from that shoe, where they could determine it had already been filled once with blood. And
oh my
then,
God.
Yes. And I thought that was insane to even piece that together, because I don't know that I would have thought of that, you know, but like, okay, so that's interesting. But yeah, so he did just, that's when he came back up. And then they also could tell that he had come back by the wounds, like when they were inflicted and how they were coagulating, like how they were healing.
Okay.
Because some were way later. So they're like, okay, he killed them here, which I'm like, how did they even know that back then? I mean,
right.
I guess there's more than I thought, because then I started going down the road of Googling, like, when did we start using DNA? And, you know, like you could really trace it back far. So then I know I had mentioned before, very creepy, but all of their faces were covered. So it's like he did that all. Then he walks around, covers them up, and then he puts cloth, whatever he can find, anything. He covers every single mirror and any reflective piece of glass in the house. They even found one of Sarah's ripped skirts. He ripped a skirt in half to cover two separate mirrors. So there's so many reasons it could be behind this. Initially, what I first thought of was, have you seen Red Dragon, you know, with Silence of the Lambs, the Hannibal series? So
I don't know if I ever watched Red Dragon.
So good. And that one, it's very interesting, because the killer in that, he cuts out his victim's eyes and he puts mirrors in there. So it appears that there's life. So like, there could be a lot of really twisted, icky things that have to do with that. Some people say maybe he just covered it up so no one could see in, and, you know, reflections. Some people think he didn't want to look at what he had done.
I was going to say, that's the route I was going. Like, he didn't want to look at himself. He didn't want to look at what he had done.
Yes. Very eerie. Like, and to take the time to do that, right? Yuck.
Isn't there a religion that when you're in mourning, you're supposed to cover all the mirrors and stuff?
Yes.
Too?
See, like when I said there's a lot to cover, I had a bunch of that in there and then I took it out. But we can go back to that too, where they say that, yes, it's like a religious thing. And even, what is there? I can't remember the reason behind it, but they say you're supposed to cover mirrors as like, I don't even know exactly now, because I started reading that and then I was like, no, we already have plenty of information.
But there's so many different like avenues you could go down with this case.
I mean, I thought I knew this case pretty well, like the main, you know, parts of it, but it's like, there was just more and more weird things that I wanted to include that. So this episode's going to be a little bit longer, and I know we talked a little bit at the beginning, but I think it's worth it, because this case is insane. Now we're going to get to the part we kind of talked about earlier with the bacon. So this is a really weird thing too. Downstairs in the bedroom where Ina and Lena were, next to the bed, there was the axe, and next to the axe was a 4-pound slab of raw bacon. The bacon was wrapped in like a linen or like a cheesecloth or something. It had been removed from the icebox at the Moore's house. This is really gross. I don't know if you want to, if you've heard this, prepare yourselves or earmuffs, people, but they believe that the theory behind this was that whoever had killed them used this bacon to masturbate with. And that is why Lena was posed in a sexual position.
Oh, I didn't hear that. The thing I watched was just like, there was a pound, like 2 pounds or something of bacon found on the floor and they didn't know why. And then it mentioned
disturbing.
The food being on the table and stuff too.
Yes.
But like,
yeah. Like also, who's the one that suggests this? Like, what weirdo is like, oh, maybe he used it to masturbate? What? I don't know that from experience, but like, you know, like I was laughing when I read it.
Yeah.
I'm like, who admits that? I heard, you know, asking for a friend type thing.
I'm just curious. What did it?
And I don't know how they could determine that if they found other evidence.
Right.
And if they, well, not like there was DNA back then anyway that they could test, but.
No, but then like they could tell if there was semen in it.
Like, is that like a thing? Are we doing that now? Like, I love bacon as much as the next guy, but like, not like that.
I'm curious as to what 4 pounds of bacon looks like that you can do that with. Like, did we make it into a fleshlight?
I mean, I don't know. My mind doesn't want to go there, Cassie, because I don't think I'll ever eat any bacon ever again.
But I'm like, did you wrap it around? No. Like, how?
I don't know. I don't know, Cassie. I'm just shaking my head right now, guys, because I can't. No one really could figure that out. And that was just the theory. They don't know that that's a for sure thing. Like, I don't know.
I'd rather just wanted to, like, add some little weirdness to it to throw people off. And he's like, I'm just going to throw this big blog about bacon in here.
I mean, I don't know, right?
I don't know.
Another odd fact, moving on from that, because that's just icky. And I think I hate that more than I hate any other thing in this story.
There's so much to hate about this story.
I know. Also, as far as leaving things behind, he had filled a bowl of water, like a basin, and he washed his hands off in there and he left it there with bloody water. And there was also a plate of food on the table. He also had taken the time to lock all the doors behind him. So, fun fact. Like I said, I feel like I'm jumping all over the place with stuff, but it's just, there's really nowhere good to start with this.
Yeah.
So, like I had talked about the axe marks in the ceiling earlier. So, initially, police said whoever did this was tall enough that they would have enough force that it would hit the ceiling. But then they also talked about the ceilings being really low in those houses.
I was going to say.
So that it could have been the opposite as well. So I'm like, okay, so you're looking for a tall guy that likes to get off with bacon or a short guy that likes to get off with bacon.
Yeah. When you see the house, it's not, the ceiling's low. And also the axe that was used was long.
Correct.
Like it wasn't like a little tiny hand axe.
I think any adult normal size, like one of the suspects we'll talk about who was 5'2". That's short. It's not short, but that's like an average, I mean, whatever of an adult, maybe not as a man, but like
not for a man,
could as an adult easily. I mean, anyone could really do that. I think it's safe to say we're not messing with like a kid in this, but so that was just kind of one of the things, but then they also were like, that's weird, which we'll talk about this more too, but that would have been very loud with an axe going into the ceiling and out, in and out. Back then, you don't have an air conditioning running. You don't have trains. Well, maybe they have trains, but
there is a, because the man on the train, there is
really close nearby. Right.
But neighbors are still close enough to see across.
Right. Which we'll talk about that too, because that's kind of where there's more on that. Like I said, I kind of jump around a little bit because I was too like into this case to take the time to organize my thoughts. It was more like, oh my gosh, I got to get this written down because this is crazy. So I mean, with any investigation, they look around the house too, like outside the house, because they're on this farmhouse. So like we said, they have animals, they have sheds, they have a barn. They go into the barn and they found some odd things. There were hay bales, which that is not odd in a barn, but they were stacked in a very weird way. And they could see a depression like in the top of it, like a person had been lying in it. Also like right next to where the hay bale was, there was like a small hole that had been cut in the barn wall, next to that hay bale where they think someone could just like lay on that hay bale and like watch the house. How eerie is that?
Yeah.
Which they're like, it could have been like a thing with the wood, but like, it's a little ironic because then they're like, was this person like living in there? How long was he watching them? Like, and they don't know if it's even related, but I thought that was creepy. So there's a lot of speculation on that. Some people think that this person was waiting and hiding in their house because they saw shoe prints and stuff. And that very well could just be from people, like that many people in a house, the shoe prints. Right. And yeah, they thought maybe the attic, but then one of the podcasts I listened to, they were like, I don't know how he could have done that with that many people in that house, even just sneaking out of like an attic. I mean, you'd have to be so still, you know, and then make sure, how would you know everybody's asleep to like slowly come down? So, I mean, I think it makes sense that he would enter later on, because then he could have watched from the barn to see all lights, well, not lights, whatever, lamps go out and stuff. I don't know. There's a lot of different things you'll hear on that too, which I could have spent a whole episode just on that, but right. You know, just the main parts here. So I know we talked earlier too about all the people that came in the home. So they were able to say that over 100 people entered the home that day, friends and family, people who knew them. Who wants to see that?
I don't get that. I wouldn't want to see that.
True crime obsession. I mean, if there was a murder case here, would I want to go look? I mean, not if I knew him. I don't know.
I don't want to look at, I don't even like to look at crime scene photos though, really, like of the bodies and stuff. I don't like
that's
those.
That's true. I'm thinking more of like when I see a car accident, it's like, oh my God, what happened? But yeah, I don't know that I would want to see bodies like that. Well, especially in this case, like very, very violent. No. So people that came in, you know, they're walking around everywhere. They're touching things. Some people even took things from their home. There was someone who took a piece of Josiah's skull.
Ew.
And it's not the killer, we don't think. I mean, based on everything I read, I'm like, no, no, because they like display it later on that it was part of this, you know, and plus that's way too obvious. It was more like they were like, it's not like it was a souvenir. It was just gross. Who does that?
Yeah. It's just so, someone being like, ooh, I'm going to make some money off of this probably.
Isn't that gross? Out of all things to take, really?
Yeah.
Okay, by the time they finally get it sealed off, damage is done. Everything has been messed with. There's really no point. Like, it was just a total shit show, they said. Like, when they were trying to guard the house, they said people would, like, distract people, like, watching the house, and then they'd have them sneak in behind them and stuff like that. Just, like, very sketchy.
Why?
I don't even know. Like, why? Exactly why? So they even brought in bloodhounds, and they referred to them as the famous bloodhounds. They were the Beatrice bloodhounds. So there's some good that comes from there. They probably had to have their own there with all the things that happened there.
This is a bit before that though, but
quite a bit, but you know, so they were good dogs, cause all dogs are good dogs, but they unfortunately were not that, I don't want to say famous, but they really couldn't do anything. And that's not their fault, because everyone effed with the crime scene and they had 9,000 cents. But they did have them smell the axe, and they did follow that smell down the road in front of a man named Frank Jones's house, which we'll talk about him a little more later. But they stopped. It made me laugh. One of the podcasts, they said he stopped, or they stopped, smelled, looked, carried on like, nah, I'm good. And so they said that they were like, okay, we don't know what that means, but they followed that scent all the way to the river where it stopped. They took them to the other side of the river, thinking that maybe whoever did it swam across to the other side, but they couldn't pick up a scent on the other side. So they have no idea. So that was kind of a dead end there. And with all of this happening, this is obviously very, very huge news. All the hotels, which it's funny that they use the word hotels, because I was like, did they have like hotels back then?
Right.
Holiday Inn. They were all booked because everybody was coming into town to see all of this. And they were all so intrigued. The local hardware stores had sold out of locks. People in town took turns staying awake overnight, like shifts, just to watch. It was just a frenzy, which, I mean, that's like something crazy. It's bad. I mean, if one person was murdered, I think it would be a frenzy, but many. So everyone was just terrified. A few days after the murders had happened, they did have like a big joint funeral for all the victims together. And the mayor even had all businesses closed for the day. So I thought that was like kind of cool.
Yeah.
But so they did that. So then, as part of the investigation, they look into what was going on the days like leading up to the murder. They did say there was an excessive amount of peddlers, which people selling things, salesmen, they said. So this was funny. One of the big ones around, they were selling wallpaper cleanings. So I thought that was very 1912, right? So other than that, there wasn't a lot going on. People did think, though, that it was odd that Mary, their neighbor, hadn't heard anything before the murders, too, because we had talked about that a little bit, too, about how things were so quiet back then. And with it being June, they most likely had windows open in the summer without, you know, central air.
Right.
And it's not like Mary was that old that she couldn't hear, which maybe, though, I mean, it's not like they had the medical stuff like they do now. So, I mean, you just don't know. But we also don't know like where her window was in relation to their house. And we don't know how much space between. But even if she had heard something, first of all, like we had mentioned earlier, there wouldn't have been any screaming because they were determined that they died before that. Other than that sound of the axe up and down. I mean, like, even if you heard that, what would you think of it? Like, I don't know that I would think of it as being something bad.
It might not even, especially if you're half asleep and you know what wood chopping kind of sounds like.
And
you might not think much of it. Or being farm animals, it could be a farm animal kicking a barn or something.
True. Like, and maybe she was like a really heavy sleeper too. I mean,
we get up at 4 a.m.
Yeah, man. No. She's in REM. No, I don't know what cycle that really is, but the REM cycle, you know.
But it's what's interesting to me is not necessarily so much that no one around the neighbors heard anything. It's that no one in the house.
Yeah, I agree. I find that because very weird.
Like, especially like being next to each other.
Yeah.
Like, how did his wife not wake up?
I know. Like, and especially if he was struck that many times initially, wouldn't you wake up immediately? I mean, it's not like it was like one and then done. Yeah. I mean, and that's a very just like, I feel like a very personal thing. You don't really hear about axe murders now, which everybody had an axe back then because that's how they did all the things. But like, geez, no thanks. That's just insane. Well, and I find that weird too.
Hit that many times too is it's a lot of anger or very personal or.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't know, but let me see here. Sorry, I was trying to find back where I was. Oh, and the sad thing about Mary, like I had mentioned before, she loved those kids and was like a grandma to them. So I'm sure if she had heard something too, and what are you going to do? Also go out there. Hey, what are you doing? No.
Yeah.
She was so traumatized by it. She actually died only, I think it was like 6 months after this happened. They said that she died due to a lingering illness that was directed to anemia, which was caused by a breakdown from a trauma that she experienced. How sad is that? Like, I don't think you're ever the same after that.
No.
I mean, gosh, especially seeing it too. So, so much that goes into this case. So I kind of was like, well, we'll talk about the suspects that were involved. And that's primarily kind of what's it, because like I had said before, still unsolved to this day, that's the crime and kind of the investigating portion of it. I know I mentioned Frank Jones earlier where those dogs stopped and barked in front of his house or whatever. He was an Iowa state senator and he actually had employed Josiah for many years. He had an implement store. So Josiah worked there for a long time before he left to open his own store. So there was kind of some drama, I guess you could say there, because they had said that Josiah had actually taken a lot of business away from him, including that John Deere deal. So that account was huge. It also was said that Josiah had a sexual affair with Frank Jones's daughter-in-law. So there was kind of a theory there that he was pissed about a lot of things and had someone go kill them all. There was a theory that the mistress, you know, the daughter-in-law was pissed. He wouldn't leave his wife and that Sarah was actually the target in this. There was a lot of things that kind of went into that. And I could have spent a whole episode just on that too. That's kind of the summary of him. But the daughter-in-law too, it sounds like she was kind of, very flirty with everybody. She obviously was married, but she was kind of known, I guess, for getting around a lot and doing that, which whatever. So I'm like, if that's the case, though, wouldn't you go after other guys too?
Right.
If that was just the case. Josiah was very good looking, by the way. Have you seen pictures of him? I mean, given they're like old photos, I was like, oh, hey, Josiah. Okay.
Things I watched, I don't know why they blacked out everyone's pictures. Like, even I was like,
that's odd.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I'll post a picture for you. I mean, there's like two, because do they even have, I mean, they had photography, right?
Yeah.
See, now I'm like, what year am I in? Oh God. Okay. So, after all that and a ton of investigating, Frank was actually, you know, cleared and they said he was no longer a suspect. So, a couple other little random suspects. I mean, of course they interviewed tons of different people. Sam Moyer was one of them. That was Josiah's brother-in-law. And I guess he did not like Josiah. And apparently he often threatened to kill him, that he was going to kill him. So they looked into him.
If Josiah did cheat on his wife, like as a protective older brother,
That reminds me of the Friends episode. If you don't know what I'm talking about, when Ross talks about how he will hunt them down, Chandler down, and kick his ass. Yeah. Okay. You know, that's just what it made me think of. All my Friends people. Okay. So that's enough with that, but they are able to clear him because he has an alibi. So there were oh my gosh, I can't talk today, guys. There were also a couple other suspects that had been in town just those few days. They interviewed them. They all were cleared. So that kind of led them to their biggest suspect, which I immediately was like, oh yeah, for sure he did it. But not, I don't know now. So this was Reverend George Kelly. He was a preacher and he was kind of like a known creeper, definitely a sexual predator. So he was British, not that that necessarily matters, but the fact that like people recognized him because of his accent. So it makes it more prominent to the, I mean, you know, they're like, oh yeah, that guy, because he has this accent. So he was from a town about 40 minutes away at this point. Like he lived there. So he's not from Villisca, but he would be there every now and then. He had a bad temper. He was only 5'2 and 119 pounds. So he's a little guy. He was in Villisca the night of the murders. He was actually teaching at this children's service that the whole Moore family had attended. And people that had also been there said that they noticed that he was watching them. So they don't know too, if it was like a sexual thing and he was watching Lena, you know, the oldest girl followed them. They're not sure, but that was kind of where they went with that. They also found it interesting. He had left town before dawn the day of the murders. 5:20 was when that train left. And they said he was on that train. So, I mean, he could have just been leaving, but I also find that very ironic. So this too was weird. He had spoken to an elderly couple on the train and they said that he had said, did you hear about that axe murder in Villisca? This was at 5:20 in the morning. Their bodies weren't even discovered yet. So immediately red flag, but then later this elderly couple kind of recants that and they're like, well, we're not sure what day he said that. He did say that we talked to him on the train, but we don't remember if it was that day or maybe it was like a different day. So that goes nowhere, but this is why, like witnesses sometimes just suck because you don't know.
Well, and our memories are,
cause then you question it. And back then it's not like they had like the receipt on their phone to show like, I was on that train. Nobody knew. And he rode the train often. Everyone did. Oh yeah. As we're talking about trains and earlier, I'm like, I don't know if there's a train. Yeah, there was clearly. Duh. So just 2 days before the murder happened, he was even caught peeking in on women, like different houses, looking in at women, just peeping Tom. And he was known to do this very often. So clearly there's a history there with that. He came back to Villisca a week after this murder happened and he was immediately just like openly obsessed with it. He even posed as they said Scotland Yard detective to get access to the crime scene. He told the investigators he knew what had happened and he was also left-handed, side note. So I don't know if he did do it, if he went in there to like relive it or if he was just really that weird and wanted to go in. But you know, after all,
over 100 people in town went in when the bodies were still there. So
right, he's not any different then, I suppose. So yeah. I mean, going as far as like pretending to be someone just to go in though, it's like weird.
How did they not? I don't know.
I don't know. That's kind of what I'm like. Really, that's why some things I think, wow, they were really smart, and other things I'm like, what? Did common sense not exist in 1912? They watched him even in his own yard with an axe, because everyone swings axes, like we said, you know, cutting wood. And they said he had no problem swinging this axe. So, and he did it with his left hand. So they were kind of on to him. They look into him more and they see that he had sent bloody clothing into the dry cleaners. Wouldn't it be like saturated if anything? People there wouldn't say, what the hell is this?
Right.
But also, it sounds like there was a little bit of mental illness there, so he might not have thought anything of it by taking them in. So then they don't arrest him or anything. So 2 years later, he does get arrested because he puts this ad in a newspaper for someone to come work for him. He wanted a typist. What is that? I can't think of what that's called.
Secretary?
No, it's like a weird word, like a
stenographer?
Yeah. No. Yeah. I don't know.
Like a court stenographer. They take notes.
Yeah. It was like a weird word. I can't think of it. Okay. It's something like that, but it doesn't matter. Okay. Just to type up notes for him. So, you know, in the ad, he said it had to be a female and it, was a very like confidential thing. And he would sometimes need this person to pose as a model. So this woman answered the ad, wrote back, and it was like so obscene that they ended up arresting him. And he had told her that she would be required to type in the nude. Like just, clearly not all there. So they, you know, put him in an institution, spends time there, gets out. And when he gets out, this is right around the same time that evidence is kind of coming together, because 1917 is this year. So a lot of time has passed, but clearly what do they have to go off of? So they end up arresting him and they charged him with the murder of Lena. They asked him about the other murders and he wrote a confession. He said that God wanted him to do it. So he writes this confession of killing everybody. Then he later recants it and said that he was coerced into it and he was beaten into this confession, which doesn't mean it's not true. It just means that it was forced. So,
yeah,
you know, and it was interesting though, because his confession did line up with the order of the people that were killed. However, I'm like, when everybody knew what happened, that's easy information.
And also if the police, because it's like with the Beatrice Six, they were fed this information played with, you know, like their minds were messed with to the point where they eventually could confess things that supposedly only the killer would know, except the police had shown them.
Yeah, it's right. So it was kind of one of those things that I'm like, I'm not sold. And especially with the mental illness, I feel like they just take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. So they end up going to trial though, and he confesses, but the jury just doesn't buy it. It was a hung jury. Only one person wanted to charge him and the other 11 were like, no. So they go back to trial again. And this time they all agreed to acquit him. So he's gone. Hard to say. But especially with this crime, it was such a calculated crime that I don't know that this man had the mental capacity to pull it off to that extreme without something. So this is kind of where that whole serial killer theory will kind of come in a little bit. I'm not going to go into it a ton. But
I can always talk about it a little bit too.
I'll just kind of give a brief thing on it, because I know we're long here, but I'm almost done. The book that we talked about earlier, The Man on the Train, is a book that really focuses in on that. So about 9 months before the Villisca murders, a very similar axe murder case actually happened in Colorado Springs, and two more followed in Ellsworth, Kansas, and Paola, Kansas. They were similar enough to raise concern that these crimes were done by the same person. The case in Colorado was so similar that this family, they were killed with an axe, bedsheets covered the windows, victims' heads were covered. And this is kind of where they start to suspect William Mansfield. So he's the main suspect they go with here. Detective Wilkerson was who was looking into this, and he said he was able to prove that Mansfield was present on each crime scene. So Mansfield was like a cocaine addict and just super unpredictable. He also had been the prime suspect in the murder of his wife's family, which ironically was done with an axe. The crazy thing also was that the chimney was off of the oil lamp at these, and the wick was cut in half. There was a basin where all hands were washed and it was left. So the detective Wilkerson that thought that this was this Mansfield, he said he knew it was him because they already had his fingerprints and that they think he wore gloves to avoid getting caught. So they don't really have a whole lot of strong evidence on him. But he is able to provide an alibi that he was in Illinois at the time of the Villisca murder. So they end up letting him go for lack of evidence, and he ends up winning a lawsuit he brings against Detective Wilkerson, and he won, and it said he got $2,200. I'm like, that's it? But okay.
I mean, back then, that was a lot.
Yeah, that was a lot. But then it was crazy because then later on, a restaurant owner from Shenandoah, Iowa, said that Mansfield was actually seen the next morning getting on a train in Clarinda, Iowa, which would actually disprove his alibi. They don't really talk about that a whole lot more. But there was also some similar crimes going on where Henry Lee Moore, he had been convicted of killing his mother and grandmother with an axe several months after the Villisca murders. He wasn't linked to Villisca, but they said that the similarities were so much the same that it could connect him to the other murders, which he must have had some sort of alibi as to why he wasn't in Villisca, but they think he could have been connected to the other ones, which seemed to be connected with Villisca, which is ironic. So kind of in closing here with this too, the man from the train book, it's seriously, everything I read from it was amazing. The author of this book, so it's him and his daughter, and they kind of look into the whole serial killer premise when they start looking into Villisca, because they believe that a man named Paul Mueller, who was an immigrant from Germany, they said that he was connected to a killing spree that lasted over 10 years, where at least 59 people were killed. The reason they thought it was him was because he was the prime suspect in a 1897 murder of a family in Massachusetts that had employed him as a farmhand. There was a year-long manhunt for him, but they never found him. But somehow they think that he was connected because of the similarities between all of these. And they think that if it's him or whoever it is, the killer was selecting families who lived close or near the railroad tracks, easy to hop on and leave. The suspect would travel by train a lot because it was easy. And because they happened at around midnight or after, they always made sure to get there when everyone was asleep. The blunt side of the axe was always used instead of the blade. I'm sure there was a little bit of it after the fact, but initial.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The axe in all of these cases was always left out in plain view. And every victim was covered, mirrors windows, mirrors, everything was covered and doors were always locked. So that's like what I have on that. Like I said, we could go into a whole lot more. Maybe you can go more in depth on that. That was just kind of the overview of the suspects that they thought. And then they think, well, maybe this wasn't just a one-time thing. Maybe there is.
I think it was definitely, whether it was the first guy who won the lawsuit or the German, I definitely think one of them, all of those are connected. I think that was a serial killer.
Well, and the fact that there wasn't like news like there is now for them to try to be a copycat killer is very ironic too. Because what are the chances someone would do those exact same things just by chance?
Exactly. No. Exactly.
It's terrible. It's a terrible, sad case. And maybe then we'll save next week. We'll talk a little bit more about going that you, how you can go visit this house to this day.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next week.
And I'll post pictures of the house. It's actually the background of one of our graphics we used. I wondered if anyone would notice that. But so much that goes into this case, and that's creepy enough. But you'll find out next week just how creepy things still are there.
Yes, next week, that's what I'll be covering. So if you have gone and toured or stayed the night at the Beliska House, send me your stories.
Yes, I'm so excited to hear that.
I've got a whole list of things. Like I said, I've already watched a few things, but I've got a whole list of things to sit down and watch still.
Purposely did not watch or read things that go past the crime because I was like, ooh, I want to hear some new stuff I don't know. So I'm super excited.
See, and that's where it's been a long time since I've listened to podcasts about the case and it being tied to those other ones and stuff. I can't even remember which one I listened to. I don't remember if it was MFM or if a different podcast where they talked about all of those, you know, axe murder cases.
Crazy.
And that connection and stuff. But so a few of my things have touched on stuff. But I did the same thing. I was like, I don't want to go too far
so
down
much.
That way.
Yeah. I know. Morbid, they have a 2-piece one on it. And I listened to that and I really liked how they did it because they did it different than a lot of the other people did. Highly suggest. They're amazing. And they had a lot of information that I did not know too. So it's kind of, it's fun to bring it back into focus of what actually happened. Cause I remember hearing it all, but didn't know all the details. So,
well, and it's one of those that I feel like we've gotten a lot as listener suggestions. Do you guys know about the Beliska House? Talk about the Beliska House. I'm like,
yes, we are well aware. Yes.
So yeah. So then next week we'll talk about the other end of things now and how it continues to be spooky. But
now we really have to go visit the house. So
I know, I know.
I'm invested now. So we have to.
But you guys, email us at heartland.darklandpodcast@gmail.com. Whether or not it's a Beliska story, any of your personal stories, we still would love to do a listener episode eventually. You can follow us on all of our social medias, which are always linked. TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We've got our thing going on, our giveaway. We have our Patreon set up. That'll also be linked. So yeah, until next time, stay Heartland kind.
But Darkland wary.